Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, while the vast majority of people, at least in this part of the island, are in favour of a united Ireland, what often gives them pause is how much it will cost in economic terms. Rather like the reunification of Germany, there will be a considerable task of rebalancing North and South. John Doyle is Vice President for Research at DCU, where they have been studying this. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Now, for a study like this, I suppose you had to make a series of assumptions. What assumptions did you make?
Yeah. So the latest data that's available on UK national statistics is 2023. That's been audited and signed off. So we assumed it's happening now, which obviously there's no chance of referendum happening this year. But those are real figures. So we assumed, based on this year's figures, here's what the UK spends and here's what they say they allocate to Northern Ireland. And then we also then look to decide what would happen in the future. We look back over the last 25 years of economic growth, where the South grew on average by 3.2% and the North by 1.3%. In some ways, the opposite of what we thought would happen after the Good Friday Agreement. The South grew much quicker. We assumed in some ways the economic benefits might be more in the North. And given that wasn't all good years, it was obviously good economic years in there, but also COVID and the global crash in Ukraine. So we thought it was a good mix of good and bad, and therefore a reasonable sort of, you know, medium-term projection that there is a significant difference North and South, which you'd imagine in the context of unity, would slowly converge over time.
Yeah. Now, but I suppose also assumptions about... in this scenario, how the UK would act in terms of things like pensions, or you know, how much money they're going to still contribute after the fact into this project.
Yeah, so the latest figure of 2023, the UK so-called subvention to Northern Ireland, the gap between taxation raised there or on behalf of Northern Ireland and expenditure spent in Northern Ireland, but also more crucially in some ways, central expenditure allocated to Northern Ireland. The big one that remains to be negotiated is pensions. I'll come back to that in a second. But there's lots in there that wouldn't transfer, like the cost of the nuclear weapons program. You know, Northern Ireland's allocation of defence expenditure is nearly 1.4 billion sterling, like multiples of our own. There's also issues of the way taxes collected in London, which tends to benefit London-based because they collect tax from the head office location by and large. So there's lots of things that were fairly clear-cut, and that immediately brings it down to somewhere around 7 billion euros. And then the imponderable is pensions, because the British government, like any country, like Ireland, we could abolish the old age pension in the morning legally. There's no, you know, pensions are paid, public sector and the old age pension are paid out of current taxation. Any government could abolish it. But look what happened in Westminster in the last couple of weeks and the changes to disability benefits. There's a difference between what you can do legally and what you can do politically. Mm. And I think it's hard to imagine a circumstance where a British government stands up in the House of Commons and says, even though unity has happened under the Good Friday Agreement, police officers, military veterans, nurses, people have paid into their pension in the belief that they had a pension over 40 years are not going to receive a penny from the British Exchequer. That's not what happened in the EU negotiations, which, you know, didn't go well for a lot of the time, but actually the British government never threatened to stop paying pensions for people who'd spent some of their life in Europe and some of their life working for the UK civil service. And many people have friends and relatives who've worked part of their life in the UK and part of their life in the Republic of Ireland. And the pension is actually very seamless when you come to retirement age. They divvy it up pretty much pro rata based on the number of years you worked in each jurisdiction. So we assumed that would happen again.
Now, I mean, probably a larger proportion of the Northern Ireland population are employed by the state in some respect or another. Wages generally there would be lower than they would be here. How much would that cost us then to bring it all up to parity?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a difference, but it's not astronomical. About 29% of the workforce in Northern Ireland work for the public sector. In the South, it's 25%. So it's noticeable. It's significant, but it's not a different planet altogether. Mm. Wages are the big thing. In both private and public sector, wage levels in Northern Ireland are low. Benefit levels are low. So the average public servant gets paid 48% more in the South compared to Northern Ireland. So that would have to equalise over time. It wouldn't equalise the morning after United Ireland, because given 29% of the population a 48% pay rise would cause hyperinflation along with anything else. But also the cost of living is not going to go up in Northern Ireland the morning after unity. The biggest difference is in cost of housing. That would certainly change over time. You'd imagine any Irish government before a referendum would offer a decent pay rise in year one. So Germany took 30 years to equalise wages and pensions. For this model, we just halved that. We thought 30 was unlikely to be the political decision. So we took 15 years, and that adds 150 million a year to the cost of unity every year for 15 years. It goes up by that amount each year. And that would be covered in our model, even in the lowest estimates of economic growth, that would be covered as the economy started to take off.
So, I mean, the figures, and I know, like, we're talking millions and billions, but actually they don't sound that large, really.
No, so the subvention that would transfer over, if a deal is done on pensions, is similar to what the current status quo is between Ireland and Britain, or between Britain and the EU. The day one cost that would absolutely transfer to Ireland, a deficit that had been made up, is only 1.5 billion. I know we only in billions, as you say yourself, but it's way away from the 14 billion people talk about. This report says because the health service in Northern Ireland is in a point of crisis, their education outcomes are much poorer than the South. Only 70% of people stay in education after GCSEs, or like our junior cert equivalent. It's about 95% in the South. I think that's a big issue for their economy. So we've assumed there'll be at least €1 billion of additional public expenditure on top of what's currently being spent. And then you've got obviously the year one cost of pensions gradually transferring, and the year one cost of pay rises. So that's about €3 billion in round figures. And so it's a lot of money, but it's 0.75% of the gross national income of the island. I mean, the island this year raised €164 billion in taxation, north and south. You'd be raising that to €167 billion, or you'd be borrowing it for a relatively short period, somewhere between 5 and 9 years. So that doesn't mean people will automatically change their mind on United Ireland. Many people, it won't be the biggest issue, but certainly none of these figures would give, I think, any economic shock to the island as a whole.
Yeah.
In fact, now, it would be an economic benefit, I think.
And as you project it, what period of time would we achieve the equalisation between North and South economically? Yeah.
So in terms of like public expenditure, it would happen very quickly. We looked at the Central European economies for the 20 years after joining the European Union, and the range was from 1% to 3% faster than Western Europe. So the best performing economies, the Baltics and others, grew most rapidly, 3% faster than Western Europe on average. And the slower ones like Hungary, which obviously lots of political problems in recent years, still grew 1% faster than Western Europe. And if you pick the middle of that, that would be about the level of growth in the Republic of Ireland. So the North would go from 1.3 to sort of 3.3. And there would be no deficit in that case in about year six. So you'd be borrowing money for 6 years. But of course, the GDP and GNI figures would take a lot longer to converge, up to 24, 25 years in that sort of middle of the road model. But the public finances would balance out. You'd only be borrowing to invest in Northern Ireland, including that extra billion a year, including merging pensions and benefits and wages, for somewhere, depending on the level of growth, between sort of 5 and 9 years. Okay. And even if Britain walked away without paying a penny towards pension, which is, you know, legally they could do, even though we say it's unlikely, it would only push that out to between 8 and 14 years. So the level of borrowing would go up in year one from 3 to about 7, and it would go on for longer because you're whittling it down a bit slower. But again, it's not a scary number or a very long period before you'd expect equalization in the level of economies and taxation earned north and south.
Yeah, and with that, and are you estimating that it'd bring us up all parts of the island to more or less where we are now?
Yeah, so what we sort of assumed is convergence. Obviously, there's huge differences in different parts of the Republic of Ireland. Every country has differences between rich and poor. What's unusual about the UK is it's so London-centric. The British government, in addition to calculating its subvention for Northern Ireland, they do it for Wales and England and also the different English regions. In fact, the only part of Britain that makes a fiscal profit in terms of public finances, where tax is greater than expenditure, is London. Every other part of the UK runs a deficit. So it's very centralised on the city of London. And that's unusual in the European sense. So you'd expect, well, I suppose what we assume, you can't guess the future, but if Northern Ireland has the exact same policies in education, foreign direct investment, the IDA is working for the whole island, same corporation tax policy, the same higher education policy, why would Northern Ireland be so much poorer than Cork and Kerry after 5 to 10 years, after 25 years? So we just assume that convergence is more likely than not by a long way. And it's hard to see a reason why it wouldn't happen.
Yeah. Now, it would also make Belfast the second city. I think Cork might have something to say about that. John, thanks very much for talking with us today. That was John Doyle there, Vice President for Research at Dublin City University.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.